Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Well, welcome to my abode, Al.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. I've got to say, I'm just going to get this out of the way at the start. When I was growing up as a kid, I kind of discovered punk first through Rancid, NoFX, etc. And then after that initial wave of that kind of SoCal 94, 95 explosion came the whole third wave ska thing and got big into Less Than Jake, Real Big Fish, all those bands. And then just as I was starting to go to gigs, I was about 14, we became aware of this British ska thing that was happening. Predominantly, I think, in the north and the south. There wasn't that much. There was a couple of bands in Birmingham. Farce was one of the key ones. But
a Sponge from Birmingham.
Sponge, with Midlands-based as well, And we just used to go see you guys whenever you were in town, and you were like our band. Like, because for us, the rest, and I think I've spoken to you about this before at Slam Dunk 1 year, but a lot of those other bands are very whitewashed, you know? It's very much like white boy ska.
Yeah.
And then when we saw you guys...
You mean you're talking about the British?
The British. Oh, and the American. And the American. The whole scene, both sides of the Atlantic Ocean, were very white. And then we saw you guys, and it was like this mixture of the Specials and Public Enemy, and we hadn't really been exposed to music of that kind of vibrant multiculturalist energy before. And we fucking loved you, dude. And it was one of my favorite groups to go see for many, many years back in the day was King Prawn. So wanted to say big up for that.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Because, I mean, at the time, we're not conscious of this fact that, you know, people like, you know, people say, oh, God, you're the, you know, we got into music because of you guys, or, you know, like, you really turned us into this, turned us on into that whole ska thing and that. But, you know, at the time, you know, we're totally oblivious to this fact, you know.
Really?
But because I mean, like, you're talking about those bands at the time, because our impression was that a lot of those the British bands that we were, I was kind of like contemporaries, let's say,
Who would you have seen as your contemporaries?
Well,
at that time,
it's a difficult one, because we used to get, I mean, we're not a ska band, like, you know, like some of those bands you mentioned, like Fast Sponge, who are more kind of like the American.
Yeah.
What would you call it? Second wave? I don't know.
Third wave.
Wave? Bands like Less Than Jake and
Because the second wave would have been like Two Tone.
Okay, I'll see what you're saying. Okay, So, those Americans kind of copied the British bands from the early 80s, late 70s, those ska bands and stuff. And then it was like these British bands are like copying the American bands, you know, like...
And that was very much the punk scene.
It was. But we were, you know, like we weren't, because of the type of music that we play, we're not that playing that kind of like, you know, sorry to say, but Hawaiian shirts.
That's
I know you like the Hawaiian shirts.
I love the Hawaiian shirt.
You know, I mean, I think Zach.
The wacky kind of,
Zach, that kind of like, I know, I think in America it's kind of like, there's kind of like the, the kind of goofy high school kids, no?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, we're always, we're slow, but you know, we were slightly a bit older than those bands anyway.
So
like, you know, these bands were like listening to, like I said, that, you know, bands like Less Than Jake or Mad Caddies and
Boss Tones would
that,
have been
but we didn't know anything about those bands we kind of missed that. I mean, I
what music did you guys all
at that
grow
time
up with
at that time when they were probably listening to that, we were listening to things like drum and bass and and at that time, not, you know, early acid house and stuff like that. And because, you know, there was a period where kind of like rock music completely died. It's just like no one was going to gigs at all, you know. And it was, that was when we were first started, of course. We was time it to the best, and you know, people were going into club, were going more into the club scene, dance scene, you know. And then we started to notice later, let's say in the late 90s, let's say. And I think that, you know, like, For me, I don't know, I think it was like Nirvana just changed all of that. Suddenly, like, rock music became cool again. And so you had a new generation coming up that were listening to, that were, you know, into rock through Nirvana, I would say, through Nirvana.
And then later on, obviously, I mean, Green Day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, bands like that, you know. So, like I said, just going back, at that time, when we first started playing, we used to go on tour with bands like Therapy.
Really?
Yeah,
I love Andy so much.
Or playing with 1 Minute Silence.
Yeah, of course. They were my first ever gig. The Wolfram Hall. It was 1 Minute Silence and Pitch Shifter.
Yeah, and so we were playing more with bands that were kind of like from the metal scene.
Yeah,
you know? And you know, like Kerrang were into the band, and we used to get written about in Metal Hammer and kind of like the rock magazines. You know?
I remember this is one of the few quotes, and I remember it as clear as day.
Go on, then.
From Kerrang about you guys, and it's always stuck with me because it's just a brilliant phrase. They referred to you as a multicultural chaos machine, and that's always stood out for me. That quote, I don't know why, but I guess that kind of sums it up.
You know,
perfectly.
And I think that the thing that, you know, so we had people that were from the metal scene into the band. We're not playing heavy metal,
but there's certainly a similarity with Rage
Energy. It's the energy. People who are into the energy of the band. That's why people, you know, people like the Prodigy, and things like this. So it's people who are, you know, people from a rock scene are into like things like the Prodigy or drum and bass, because it had the energy, you know. And that's what people, it's exciting now to go and see a band that full on in your face and that when you're 14.
Exactly. I was right time, right place. It was fucking perfect.
And
just the mixture of characters, like there was you on one corner, there was Mr. Devil on the guitar, obviously Bar Luck, like all such different individual characters. And then it was the unison of all of that together, this cocktail.
It's like and it's just the energy from the band, because at that time when we were playing in those days, we just want to be the hardest band around, you know, doing what we did, you know. So we used to play everything. Used to be, okay, let's just play hard, flat out, you know.
Yeah. How did you guys all meet? Like the original King Prawn lineup, how did that get together?
Well, I've known Roger the guitarist, Devil Hands, from right back in the day,
did you go to school together?
No. He was a little bit older than me.
He's the oldest in the band then,
he's
the
oldest. We're not far behind him. And then we've been playing in bands for years. We'd played in various bands together. And then we decided to put this band together, and I think at the time it was like, must have been like Melody Maker or something. We just put an ad in the Melody Maker for like a bassist.
That's how it used to get done, wasn't it?
Bass player and a drummer. And then we just went through a whole load of people, and then we found Nick, and then we found Barbara.
So originally it was you four?
Yeah, originally us four, yeah. And then we decided we wanted some horn, some brass, and we had Nelly.
Yep.
So Nelly, I mean, probably joined us, 5 years later or something like that. And then five of us were together until 2003 when the band split up. And then when we reformed, 10 years later, in 2013, we all reformed apart from Baba. He didn't want to do it. And then we got Zach, who's our bass player now.
Yep.
And then Nick Horn from...
my good buddy.
Yeah, your mate from Sonic Boom 6. He's playing...
Keys,
yeah. and trumpet.
Yeah, but he's such a talented musician,
yeah,
man.
Not at the same time,
of course.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, he probably could.
Yeah,
if,
well,
if
yeah.
you threw down the gauntlet, I reckon he could pull it out.
We'll put that test to him next time.
Do it on Sunday, Boomtown, last minute. By the way, Nick,
you got to play both. Yeah, and then Matt from a friend that we've known for years, trombone player Matt Darcy, and then completed the lineup. Yeah.
How did the recording of, was it First Offense? Was that the first record that you guys made?
Yeah, that was the first one.
How did that go? That was with Ace from Skunk and Anansie, right?
Yeah, that was with Ace. And I think we kind of recorded and mixed that in 72 hours or something ridiculous. I think we recorded it in a day and then recorded and mixed in about 2 or 3 days. It was really rushed. Yeah, Ace did that. Yeah, because... Ace is a mate of Roger's,
right?
And he was really into the band, and he was wanted to get into production, I guess, at that time. And he did the first two albums actually.
He did the first two.
I think he did the second one as well.
Friday in London.
Oh no, he didn't do Friday in London. No, he didn't. No, I'm mistaken. Yeah.
I mean, those tunes. There's a few singles from each of those first couple of records that I can still remember vividly hearing for the first time, like Not Your Punk, Racist Copper.
Yeah.
Just like ferocious.
Yeah, like I say, at that time it was just okay. Let's go. We want to be hard because we used to play. You know, we had friends like Medulla Nocta that were ferocious. I mean, completely different type of music.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like okay, yeah, we want that kind of power in what we do, you know, and the mentality of the band was just like, yeah, we're hard.
Well, you seem like men. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of those other bands would cut, like you know, Faster, Sponge, Cap Down. A lot of those guys, you know, they seem like more our age group. Whereas you guys seem like geezers.
Yeah. Thanks.
These guys mean business.
Yeah. I mean, like you know, that was. I mean, not in a kind of like macho way.
No.
It wasn't like that at all. No. We just want to play hard the music, you know.
Yeah.
And like now, it's kind of different. Now we want to, you know, we want to groove more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you can hear that on the new record a lot.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
What did I want to ask you? So I've spoken to a couple of people from, I guess, the generation that followed on from you guys.
Yeah.
Itch from the King Blues, Barney from Sonic Boom 6, Josh from the Skints. All three of those guys, say what a huge inspiration King Prawn was on all of those groups, respectively.
Again, it's a surprise because, you know, because like...
Did you take any of them out on the road?
No. Sonic Boom 6,
yeah.
The Skints, I don't think they were around. And when did they start?
They're young. They're super young. So yeah. Josh is only like mid to late 20s, I think now.
Because probably when they started, that's when we were
you were done.
We were done then.
Yeah. Why did you break up just pretty much like right after you released easily, I think, the best album of that incarnation of the band? Like Got the Thirst was fucking wall to wall, Stone Cold, King Prawn classics.
I think it's just it kind of ran its course, really. You know,
was that difficult though, knowing you'd made this great album that then it was over?
No, because you know, when you're involved in the band, we make the album and we don't think, oh, this is a great album. It's just like, okay, you know, you record an album and you play it, and by the time you finished it, you're sick to death. I mean, you lose all judgment of what you've done. No, for me, the best moments is like when you're actually recording it and writing it.
Yeah,
are the things that what I can remember because that's fun, you know. But having the part when it's finally recorded, having to mix it and just like go over it again and again, analyzing it, and that kind of just at the end of it, you're just like, oh, I don't want to hear this ever again.
Was that quite a step up production wise? Because it was Golf was the label that put that record out.
Yeah,
right?
No, that actually.
And they were obviously the label that did Less Than Jake, and they didn't. Did they not help you out?
They put the record out.
Right.
We financed that. We did that ourselves, and then we licensed it to them,
right?
For 15 years, I think. So 2000, and that actually has come back to us now.
Like
we are the owners
just now.
Yeah, a few years ago. Yeah, so we that record has come back to us now. But like you say, I mean, now we also another thing is, of course, like so when that record came out and we split up like, I don't know, 6 months later.
Yeah.
So a golfer really happy, I bet.
I bet. Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, that it was kind of forgotten. We'd all moved on and never even really thought about the band or the records or the you know, the legacy, if you want to say,
yeah.
if you want to call it that. And we weren't around to reap the accolades. So, yeah. So, you know, like I said, we have a completely different, we don't think of ourselves as like, you know, influencing bands or changing people's lives or something like that. You know, it's for us, it's a strange thing when people say that. It's like, oh, really? It's like, you know, after the band split up and that, and when I was playing with ADF.
Yeah.
To play with ADF.
Of course.
People
yeah. We'll talk about them in a bit.
People used to come to me and say, oh, you were in King Prawn. Oh my God, they were my favorite band. It's like, you really, you know, you.
Well, it's almost like.
And it's like, oh my God, you know, nobody told us. If only people had told us when we were playing, then we might not split up.
Do you think that would have been the case?
Nah, I'm joking.
You were done.
Nah, yeah.
Because that was pre-internet, wasn't it? So you wouldn't have had those same kind of chat rooms
exactly,
and the
yeah,
message no, wouldn't
yeah,
have been
exactly,
getting spread.
Exactly. It was a completely different time. There was an industry then. The whole industry was different. You know, this was like before. Probably even before MySpace.
Yeah, it would have been.
You know,
Yeah.
I think it was even before MySpace.
2003 was the year, right?
Yeah. So it would have even before all of this, before Facebook and everything. So it's before social media and that. And, you know, like now it's different. It's different. You know, you have to think that at that time, up to that period, we were touring a lot. And
You must have been, because we would see you at least 3 times a year in Birmingham.
Just play, you know, it was our living, you know, let's say, if you want to call it that. And I think that when you're doing something that you love, just, you know, the effect of it kind of wears off. And in the end, it's just like having a job. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah, the grind.
Yeah.
Because touring's hardcore when you don't have a lot of money. You're not staying in luxurious hotels.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That can take its toll, for sure.
Yeah, everything kind of takes its toll. And like... you know, you're with each other all the time, and you know, you're not seeing your friends, you're not going anywhere, and I mean, going out with mates and having a social life and that, because everything's just that kind of is your life and social life and everything. And I think you kind of become a bit insular in the whole thing. And I just wanted to, and I think me and a couple of others just wanted to do something different. I wanted to leave the UK. You know, and that kind of like maybe sort of said, okay.
Was there any particular reason why you were feeling that pull away?
Yeah, my girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh, so you'd been with her since
the very early days. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, that was another thing. And like, you know, and like I say, if you do something that you love and you're just doing it all the time, it becomes like a job. You know? And any job,
I get that.
Okay. And so, yeah, it become, you just kind of, think, oh, what am I doing this for? You know, I'm not enjoying it anymore, kind of thing. And now it's completely different, you know, the whole
situation. Is it like a busman's holiday now when you
jolly
get together
we
with the
boys? We call it Jolly Boys.
Yeah?
Jolly Boys holiday, yeah.
Because everyone wants to be there.
Yeah, everyone wants to be there.
It's a break
and also there's no pressure. So, you know, we just play the things that we want to play. It's not like, I mean, if you're doing it as a job, maybe... could be a gig somewhere and you think, oh, I'm not sure I want to do it. But okay, but we need to do it because we need to pay for the insurance. We need to pay for the storage. We need to pay for it. Okay, we have to go and do the gig. So now there's no, there's none of this financial pressure of playing. You know, we can just pick and choose what we want to do, you know, and it's there's no pressure on it. We don't feel any pressure to do anything now. So it's a lot more fun.
Do you have anything these days, like a manager or an agent or a publicist or any of that, or is it all kind of DIY?
We still have an agent, but the we don't have a manager.
So all the business side, you guys just run yourselves.
We just do it ourselves, yeah. But it's not hard. It's not hard. It's not a lot of work. It's not a hard job. I don't think. Just have to, you know. Also, you know, with now we have the internet and social media. Well, social media. Communication's a lot easier.
Yeah. Oh, you can promote your own stuff, can't you?
Yeah, and also writing. Yeah, promoting and stuff, which we are terrible at because we're not.
You're not from that school.
We're not that generation, you know. Like now, like we were talking about. I was with Nick the other day, and he's like, "Oh God, man, I didn't get into this to tweet." Yeah, I didn't. It's like, you know, and like.
It is funny, isn't it? It's a whole new game now.
And
you see people, like, there's a lot of these self-made. I think that the move has shifted from bands to individuals.
Well, yeah, it's perfect for singer-songwriters.
And it's It's kind of a me culture we're in now as well. So it's all about the individual, the self. And you see these people like Post Malone and guys like this and girls like Billie Eilish and stuff who have never had like a record deal. They've just kind of maybe put out a song on SoundCloud or something, get discovered, blow up.
Yeah.
And they're like these multimillionaires, but they're still like DIY independent artists. It's mad because all the tools are in place to be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I mean, in one aspect, you can reach, you know, it's good for singer-songwriters and, you know, more for them than I say for bands, but you can reach out to your audience. You're expected to be in contact with them. If you don't, someone's going to write a negative review.
And if you're not constantly present, it's like, oh, they must have broken up because we haven't seen a post for a week.
I just went to make a cup of tea. Sorry.
Well, you should have posted it out. It's funny though, because I imagine a lot of your fans are of a similar age group to me and perhaps a bit older, so sort of early 30s and up. So a lot of those people probably aren't messing around with social media that much either.
Exactly, yeah. So they don't care.
So they're like, just do the music, do the gigs. That's enough for us.
Total we're happy with that style, without even lights and stuff. Without light, any flashing lights and stuff.
Let me ask you about Barbar. Where did you meet that guy, and like, what's his story?
Barbar,
because he's just a fascinating individual.
We met him through. He responded to the ad. You know, and the crazy thing is, what's Barbar doing reading The Melody Maker?
Yeah, that's one of life's great mysteries, isn't it?
Yeah, that, you know, what was he doing? And through Melody Maker, and he's a character.
Is he like full tilt, full time? Is he always Barbar? Like, is there ever any respite or break, or is he always on?
Yeah, Barbar's just Barbar, isn't it? Barbar's Barbar, and he'll always be Barbar.
So. Yeah.
I haven't seen him for a long time, so it's not really fair for me to talk about him, because I haven't seen him for like since 2003.
Really? That original breakup, you haven't even been in like physical.
I don't live in the UK, and our paths don't cross. You know, our paths just don't cross.
That's wild.
And so it's not really fair to say, because you know, a lot happens can happen in like 15, 16 years. You know, people change a lot, so I don't want to start saying things about him how he was then, because he might not be like that today. Like we've all changed, you know. Well, we're not the same people.
True, but okay. What you can tell me is, how was playing with him then? Because on stage, he had a real unique energy and vibe that he brought to the overall equation.
Yeah,
which was definitely a key part of that.
Secret ingredient
that made you guys a success, right?
Aesthetically, he's great, you know, to look at and stuff like that. Playing wise,
right?
He'll be like, "What are you doing?" Or like, "What are you doing? What's happening, Bob?" I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, turn on the amp." Then maybe we, you know.
So it's almost like a kind of a Sid Vicious Bears.
No, but he
type,
can play.
Like,
he can play. No, he can play.
But he brings a vibe with
him. He can play. Let's be fair. He can play. But sometimes I think it's the performance. He gets lost in the performance, and you know, you're the bass, but you have to play bass. That's the minimum thing. No, but you know, like it wasn't always. He can play bass, and he can play quite well, I have to say.
What's your favorite Barbar memory? You got a good favorite Barbar story?
It's what I can remember. I can remember I think it was the first European tour that we did in I think it must have been, we were in Poland, and it was really hard tour. You know, we were doing this tour in for next to nothing, you know, eating cabbage every night in Poland, traveling around in an ambulance, in a converted ambulance. When I say converted,
Itch told me about this. Yeah.
Who told you this story?
Itch from the King Blues said you guys used to travel around in an ambulance. Yeah.
Well, we didn't used to. We did one tour.
Right.
We did it once. I think it was like 3 weeks or 4 weeks, nearly a month in this ambulance. But when I say converted, it wasn't, I mean, they just took out the stretchers and the oxygen masks and stuff, but they still had the benches. So you're sitting across from each other and that, and it was really long drives, terrible roads, you know. It was in autumn or early winter, I can't remember. And we just played this gig, and everyone said, oh, all these, you know, kids were saying, come back to our house, we'll have a party, blah, blah, blah. So we went there and they were like drinking like this like really, really strong vodka.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've tried that stuff.
Yeah,
like 95%
stuff. They're just straight drinking moonshine. I think Barbar just like guzzled a whole bottle to himself. Like, oh, I could drink it. Like, you know, everyone's smoking and everything. And the next day, I don't know, we were looking for Barbar. We couldn't find him. And then we were just strolling. We went out and we just like kind of, I remember just found him. I don't know what he was doing. He was just standing with his head in a bush. It's just like, yeah. It's like, what are you doing? And like, he just completely lost the plot. You know,
moonshine will do that to a man.
Frazzled his mind. Yeah. And then what other things? Oh, yeah, of course. I remember one time I remember shot him in the head with an air pistol, right? And then we basically had a fight because I shot him in the head, but I didn't think it was loaded, right? So basically, we were at someone's house and he was sitting on the floor and I was sitting on the sofa and they had like a BB gun. I don't know, those ones that fire little pellets.
Yeah,
not the metal one, no, those plastic yellow pellets. And it was in my hand, and I just pretended to shoot him, but pulled the trigger and shot him on the back of the head with this, that, you know, from about 2 feet
blank
away.
range, as they say. Yeah.
And then he just completely lost it. Of course he would, right? And went for me, right? And basically I managed to hold him off and stuff. And then everyone like managed to hold him down. He had this massive welk on the back of his head. But I did apologize, but he didn't. He thought that I'd done it on purpose, but I didn't know it was loaded, you know? So yeah.
In my defense,
in
officer.
In my defense, I didn't know, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about the writing and the dynamic of how you would create those first few records and how the songs would come about.
You mean,
say, Surrender to the Blender, Got the Thirst, some of those, like, you know, key King Prawn songs, Caught in a Rut, Bringing Down the House, Dominant View.
Yeah, just
songs like that. Was it all of you as a band collectively? Like, was there a certain writing partnership within the team, or how did they materialize? Or was each song different?
Each song was different. So, for example, if you think so, some songs that I wrote myself with the guitar, I mean, I come up with the riff and the vocals, so I just do it at home, and then everyone would just fit in around it, and then they can add overdubs and stuff like that. Other times, if someone else comes up with an idea, a riff or a hook or something, then I would just work the vocals on top of that, you know. Like, for example, give me an example of a song.
Dominant View.
Okay. Dominant View, I think Nick came up with that originally. And I think he had some little portable recorder or something. I can't remember what it was. I mean, the technology changes all the time now. And he'd written this tune on there, I think, and he gave it to me. And then I just basically, oh, yeah, it's like a kind of like a drum and bass kind of thing.
So, yeah.
So, yeah. And then so I just put the vocals on that, and then basically everyone, so I think Nick probably had the drums and the bit which goes dan 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 dan. They probably had that, and then we just put the rest on while we, you know, because we used to get together twice a week to play in a rehearsal, regardless of whether we
had a gig or not. Yeah.
So we always get together twice a week to play down in a place called Fortress, which doesn't.
I know. I think it does.
No, but it's not the original Fortress.
Right.
And then we just go into this. We were just there in the rehearsal, and we would just write these new songs like that. Yeah, you know.
Loneliest Life, that's a banger.
Loneliest Life, that was Roger. Come up with the chords on that, but I think it was kind of like an acoustic thing, and then we kind of like changed it a bit and stuff. Yeah, and I just wrote the vocals on the top of that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Here's a song you never play. I want to know why. Yeah. Which you know what I'm going to ask, don't you?
Smoke some shit. Because that was like meant to be like a joke.
And it just took off and you were like, shit, this is getting out of hand.
Yeah. I came up with that, actually, that one. With just the kind of like that intro guitar. And then there's that, you know, my mother told me, that kind of like nursery rhyme thing comes from.
Like the kind of My Boy Lollipop. Oh, what's the tune? Yeah. The clapping song, Shirley
clapping
Ellis.
Clapping song, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we took the chorus. We took the chorus for that, but it was meant to sound kind of like crass and stupid, you know. Because at the time, I think there were lots of songs about smoking marijuana, and I think I what's the song? I Want to Get High. Not I Want to Get High. What was that song by Afro Man?
Yeah, because I got high.
There's all that kind of stuff. And we kind of said, okay, let's just kind of like do this song, but let's make it so obvious, so stupid.
But it's a piss take.
Yeah.
And everyone just embraced it and loved
it. Yeah, exactly. And
I got to be honest, that was one of our favourites, our group collectively, because we were big weed smokers at that time.
Yeah, but how old were you at that time?
15, 16.
Yeah, but probably to a 15-year-old, they're, you know, it's like, oh, this is great. God, yeah, for me, amazing. It'd be great, but, you know, someone's a bit, I was like, oh, it's a bit immature.
So is that the reason why you kind of pulled it in more recent times, is you feel like I can't be the age that I am now singing?
No, stuff. I mean, we have played it.
You have?
I think we did.
I've seen you in the last few years, I've never seen it.
I think we did play it. Didn't we play it at Reading or something?
Maybe
I'm
at
sure.
Reading. Never done it at Slam Dunk.
No.
I've never seen it at one of your gigs either.
I think we did play it. I mean,
maybe I'm just unlucky with when I'm in attendance. You're like, it's not on the Matt's here.
It's not happening. Yeah.
It's a great tune.
You like it, yeah?
I love it, yeah. Raise the Banner is another one that I love.
Raise the Banner, yeah, that was another one from Nick, yeah. And I actually remember writing that. I remember I took the stuff with me to Italy, and like there was a whole collection of songs like Raise the Banner, Bring Down the House, and I think there was another one. And I basically took Lick of the Flame, I think I took them to Italy, and I was just during the day just writing. I mean, the songs were like, let's say, demoed on a four track version, and so I just wrote the words and the lyrics to that, and then we get together, and then we start putting everything else, the guitar and deciding the drums, bass, and it doesn't need brass, blah blah blah, and it starts structuring it, arranging it.
And Caught in a Rut, that was a great track.
I think I did that
as a proper like kind of mosher, that one.
I think I did that one, yeah. I can't remember writing it.
So many tunes. What's some of your favourites now, looking back?
Now,
and still to play
of those ones.
Or of any of the original incarnation.
I love playing Freedom Day.
Yeah.
Because I just like the whole kind of atmospherics of that. It's just like it's kind of cinematic and sounding and stuff. It's easy to play, and that always helps. It's an easy one. There's no shouting or nothing. I can easy. It's just relaxing.
Easy on the voice, yeah.
Yeah, you know. But it's enjoyable to play, and I kind of like it. And it's also so different to everything. I think when we play that, it's like people are like, oh my god, what's this? You know, especially with the rest of the racket that's gone on that evening.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because and Caught in a Rut, I like playing that one. Dominant View. It's easier to say which ones I don't like playing.
Yeah, go on then.
But we don't play them anymore because we dropped down. Be Warned.
Be Warned.
You know what the problem is? The problem for me is a lot of those old songs, I find them too repetitive.
Simplistic.
Yeah. I don't know why that is. I think that now... I find them a bit too repetitive. They're like typical punk rock songs. So to play, they're kind of a bit simplistic. Repetitive, simplistic. But and anything that involves like straining my voice.
Like Bring Down the House, is that pretty tough on your voice?
No, that's all right. Yeah, I've changed the chorus on that the other day, yeah, but I haven't played it live yet. Maybe I'll do it at Boomtown, I don't know.
There you go.
Because like now some of them like Boom, you know, like, but you know, actually I really like playing Bring Down the House because it's got the variation of the singing and the kind of rapping, and the chorus is a bit vicious on the voice, but you know, I can change that. You know, I can change the choruses and stuff on that. I don't know, for me it's not a very well-known song, so people, and also, you know, a lot of people see us. And a lot of people haven't seen us for the first time because, like, you know, they weren't around them. So it's like, okay, we're going to change this. No one will know. Like, I don't know. Maybe people are like, oh, it doesn't sound like the record.
Yeah, that's always that kind of weird.
Yeah, but I don't know. When I go and see a band, and I mean, this is different, isn't it? Because I'm speaking from like a musician.
I like
musicians
hearing
point
variations.
Of, yeah, me too.
Especially
from
with like a kind
of
hip hop influenced band, you want it to feel fresh and unique to that moment.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that because if you want the record, sit at home and listen to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also a lot of those songs, you know, that we write, we never played live. And when you play them live, it's kind of different. It doesn't feel right. So we kind of change things, mix it up a bit, you know, because to keep it interesting. But yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So how did the Asian dub connection come about?
So basically, I went to live in Italy. And I kind of stopped playing music. And then...
Was that a conscious move? Were you like, I'm done with it for a while. I want to
step
away.
Yeah. Because I didn't want to start from zero again in a band in Italy, having bandmates that, you know, that you have to communicate in English and Italian. And I just got tired of it and that, you know. And also, you know, I was working. It's like, oh, my God, I've actually got some money.
Did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy having a bit of financial security for the first time in your life?
Yeah.
That was all right.
Of course. Yeah, you don't know.
Felt good.
Yeah, it felt good to have a bit of cash in my pocket. Yeah, why not? For always being poor, I wasn't rich. Yeah, I'm not saying I was rich, but.
But you had a steady wage.
Yeah, I had an income.
A lot of musicians and creatives often don't.
Yeah, never had it before. So. You know, I was like 30, at that time I was about 33, 34, 35, or something like that, maybe. Or maybe a bit younger, 32 maybe. And, you know, that's the first time in my life I've actually had a proper job, you know, because I've just been playing music all for most of my life. And anyway, so I was just doing that, not thinking about music. And then one day Steve Chandrasonic, that you've spoken to, he called me up and said, oh, hi Al, because I'd met Steve years and years ago when we did Got the First. I remember meeting him for the first time. He came to the studio because we were talking about maybe doing a remix, an ADF remix of one of the tunes.
Were they a band that you were inspired by in any way?
Completely different scene. I liked what they did, but I mean, it's just stuff that I heard on the radio.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I happened to be somewhere and they were playing live, you know.
What day are they at Boomtown? Because they're at Boomtown
today,
this week.
I think they play today.
Miss them.
No, because I tried to, it's not clear, is it? It's quite hard on Boomtown. They don't say.
The day splits.
Why don't they say when their bands are playing?
I know, it's just one big fucking smorgasbord of acts, isn't it? You're like, when are they? Where are they?
Yeah, because I was thinking, okay, I'd like to, you know, maybe go and see them play if they were playing on Sunday. Because I thought they were playing, from the poster, it looks like they're playing on Sunday. But I think they were playing, I think they played this afternoon, so. So anyway, I missed that chance to see them. And so Steve called me, just going back. So Steve called me and we spoke and he said, okay, look, would you be interested in doing some songs? I said, yeah, okay. And just send me the tracks and I'll work on them.
Had you done anything like that before as kind of like a guest vocalist, as it were? Or was it not being presented in that way? Was it like, with something we're going to create together?
No, it's just like we're doing a new album. Would you be interested in doing a track?
Right.
Basically. And I said, yeah, okay. So send me the stuff. And I started working on the song. And then a couple of songs later, he said, oh, about this one. Okay. And then I don't know what happened. And then he just said.
He just lured you in subtly.
Just said, like, yeah. And then it's like, okay, like, you know, we're looking for. Then later it's like, we're looking for a new singer. Would you be interested to come and play live with us? I said, okay, why not?
why not? It's a new thing for me. I've never played anyone else's material. So, yeah, just, you know, learn these songs, you know, and we were getting together to do the new songs for that new album at the time. And I can't remember, but I think the first gig that I played with them was in Singapore, right? And it's a completely different, another level, you know, like they're playing, I mean, the gigs are huge, huge festivals, you know, playing headlining band on big festivals all around the world, you know, they were on a completely different level. And for me, it was like, yeah, oh my God, I got to learn all these songs, like a whole set, you know. It's like, okay, problem is having to learn the words that you haven't written. No, that's quite hard. But it was a challenge, you know.
Yeah, because you don't have muscle memory, do you, guiding?
No. It's because, you know, it's like, you know, I wouldn't say this.
Yeah.
Right. But okay, I'll just learn it. I mean, I wouldn't say this in this way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not that I don't agree with it.
Yeah, it's your
yeah,
it's wording.
My words. Yeah, different. The wording's different. And so, like, yeah, and so it's all completely different. But it was, you know, a channel. I kind of got into it. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, I think this could even improve me.
And did it?
Yeah,
it must have done.
Definitely, because it opens up another. You look at music in a different way through someone else's eyes and stuff like that. You know, it was a really good experience. You know,
how was it crushing those big stages as well? Was that an enjoyable?
Like
playing to these huge crowds and
but it's kind of like when you play, you know, you're playing these big audiences, but they're so far away. Do you know what I mean? You don't have the intimacy doing things like that, and so like it's probably nerve-wracking if you play in your local pub in front of 15 people. It's probably more nerve-wracking, I reckon.
Because they're right there.
Yeah,
they're right
yeah,
there.
You yeah. And you have to win
eyes.
Them over. And you have to win them over. When you go there, you know, the people, they're like fans, you know, like the big audiences that are fans.
You go, put your hands in the air, the whole place
exactly,
does it.
Exactly,
like,
yeah,
that was
yeah.
easy.
Yeah. You fall over. They all come,
yeah, yeah.
yeah. You know, so, you know, it's not like you have to win over people. It wasn't in that sense, yeah. The only time, I mean, the most nerve-wracking thing is when it's being filmed or it's going live on TV, because, you know, if you mess up, you know, that's it. It's
what
there.
Kind
it's
of big TV spots
it's going to be there
you
on YouTube. Like, it's going to be like, oh, look at him. Yeah. We did a couple of things on, I remember one time we did some acoustic thing. So it was just me, Steve, and Pritpal. We did a couple of songs, like an acoustic version on something for the Hay, is it Hay and Why Festival?
Yeah, I know Hay and Why.
Is it Hay and Why?
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Yep. My parents go there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they love it.
And then we did a live one in Italy. That was like on their version of BBC One, bang in the middle of the, like at 6 o'clock in the evening, no? And so like, you basically, they have this rotate, so that if you can imagine the stage rotates, and they got it's like there's a barrier. So as one band's playing behind the barrier that you're setting up, and then as it turns round, you start playing. And so you don't know what it's
no second takes, like
no. And that one was particularly nerve-wracking because the actor, the other singer, actor wasn't there. So basically, I had to sing his parts as well as mine. So I had to do because they had more than one vocalist, and so I had to sing his parts as well as mine. And so it's like, okay, please just don't mess up. That's the only thing I'm thinking of. Remember the words, just don't mess up.
And you've got to make a good impression because
you're
part
course.
Italian
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's home turf.
yeah. So they were a bit shocked. The audience were like, oh God, he could speak a little bit of Italian. Yeah.
I'll bet they weren't expecting that. Yeah.
No. So.
And how long were you with them?
For them, I think about 5 years. About 2005 to 2012-ish, yeah, about 5 years. I did two albums with them, yeah. And it was a good experience. I learned a lot there. I learned a lot, which is, it's good to take away something like that.
You still in touch?
No, I'm not. Because our paths don't cross. Until our paths cross, yeah, then I'll be in touch. But, you know, nothing, there's no like, it's not like, oh, they did me wrong or something like that. It's just,
well, when
if they were at Boomtown and at the same time it was like something, if we were together, I would go and check them out, you know, definitely.
Would you ever get up with them and do it like a song?
I'd have to learn the songs again. Yeah, yeah. I can't go for all of that a second
Don't
time.
Make me do that again, man. Yeah. So when you got the band back together, did that come from your experiences with Asian dub? Like, did that start generating the cogs in your mind?
No.
How did the reformation come about?
Okay, we got together in 2013. And then, but prior to that, like, you know, every now and then the offer would come through to do you want to reform the band? And every year be like, no.
And were they coming through pretty much every year in that time?
Yeah, I mean, after a few years after the band split up originally in 2003, we used to get offers, reform the band. And none of us were really into it. And then in 2013, I don't know, we just, I was more in contact with Roger, Devil Hands, and Nick, and we kind of got together. I said, yeah, why not? I'm up for it. If you really want to do it, I don't see any harm in doing it. And then and then that kind of like got the ball rolling. No, we asked Barbara if he wanted to participate, and he was in an hour, and then he finally decided that he didn't want to do it because he was doing his own thing. That's fair enough. You know, he's been working on his own thing since the band split up. He's not going to drop that and come and play with us, which is fair enough. And then he gave his blessing to go ahead and do it. And then we had Zach, who had been playing in a band with Nick prior. And then we decided, okay, let's get some keys and expand the band a bit. Because we thought, what we want to do now, we can't really do it with just a drums, bass, guitar, and a cornet. One cornet, you know. We want to sound big. We want to have a bigger sound in band and that.
Did you feel any pressure? I guess no, because you were saying earlier on that when you did break up, you weren't aware of any idea of a quote-unquote legacy.
Yeah.
So there wasn't any like, oh, this has got to be good. Like, we've got to make... Obviously, you'd want it to be good for yourselves anyway.
Yeah, for ourselves.
But there wasn't any of that, like, trepidation. Like,
well, No. Of course, when we played Slam Dunk that first time, it was terrible for us. Because, if you haven't played for 10 years and you go out and do the first shows, you're going to be a little bit rusty, let's say. I mean, we'd rehearsed and everything, but it's not, you know, no amount of rehearsals can make up for a show. No?
Of course.
It's like one show is worth like 20 rehearsals. And but, you know, the important thing is that it got us together, and, you know, Nick was really into doing some more recording. And so, you know, in the rehearsals that we got together, we started we said, okay, because I think we did a little tour as well in 2015, I think. And we said, okay, let's record something as a promo. And then after that, then we started to write more and more. And then basically we had the album slowly coming together. And then, and in the meantime, we're playing other shows and stuff like that. And then, okay, yeah, so, you know. It's there was a little bit of momentum that got held up by the album because that was taking a little bit too long to finish. But in the end, this year,
that's just for logistics and cost reasons, was it?
It's just trying to, you know, like, you know, we all got lives out of music, and it's just like, you know, we all work, and it's not like suddenly you finish where it's like, okay, I'm going to write an album now.
You have to get into the mood.
Also, for me, you know, we wanted to do an album that didn't sound like the last album. It's not like we want to do an album that is just the same as what we've done before. You know, we musically and lyrically, it's different, I think, to before. Like I said before, you know, I didn't want it to be repetitive. Because that's the thing, when I listen to those old records now, it's just like, okay, I kind of got it, but I wish it would do something different now. But just a subtle, even if it's just a little subtle thing, it's like, why did we just repeat it? Because everyone's just happy and like to play hard as we can. We're not even listening to what the other people are doing in the band. Let's just be hard and play. Now it's a lot more subtle, you know, of course.
Well, you're older gentleman now, obviously. Your tastes have refined and your ears have developed.
Yeah, exactly. And also the technology's changed.
So, big time.
Yeah, big time. So this is the big difference. So we can the instrumentation is limitless now, you know. We can do what we want, whatever comes to our minds, you know. But So we started writing the album in a little bit after when we were formed, and slowly when we were in the mood, we kind of wrote, but not collectively. You know, I go and do my bit, Nick would go and do his bit, everyone goes and does his bit. And I have to admit, most of it was held up because of me, because basically they had all the music done. They probably got half the next album done as well, but they're just waiting for me. Al, when are you going to write the lyrics? Come on, you've got to do it. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then I'll be at home. I've got some time to do it. And I'll start writing. It's like, you know what? There's a big pile of ironing there. I'll do the ironing first, and then I'll do some lick. And then it's just like, what's that? And at the end, it's like, oh God, the time has passed. It's like, you could just get distracted like this, no? And so we're planning to do an EP early next year of maybe 4 or 5 songs. And this week I've just gone to Nick's, no? And so I went to his house and we said, okay, we're going to write these songs. And bang, boom, in 2 days, we'd finished.
Because collaboration is the key.
Yeah, but it's just like, we're focused. This is what we have to do. You know, we've got to write 2 songs here. It's not like, okay, I've got to go out. I've got to go and buy something else. Oh, yeah, you know, because when I'm on my own, it's hard. I think anyone who says that, you know, people who work remotely, you know, work at home or work remotely, it's difficult to get to find the discipline, no? Because you get distracted by things
completely.
In the house.
No? Completely, yeah.
I needed to get out my house to go to someone else's place to do it, maybe.
I get
in
that.
In a sense, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of with me. A lot of my life is spent on this table here.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll go put some washing on. I'll go cook some food. I'll go have a cigarette.
Yeah.
You just keep putting it off. And then you're like, oh, the day's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Now I've got to start. It's dinner time. Now I've got to start preparing something to eat. Yeah. And then it's like, okay. Oh, maybe I could do it tomorrow. You know. So
where have you been pulling from lyrically for this new record? Not the EP that's coming out, but the album that is out.
The album that's out now.
Yeah. Because you've always been a political band, to some extent.
Well, we don't have a political alliance, I wouldn't say.
Socially conscious.
Conscious, maybe. Yeah. This one a lot work. Because of course I'm working now. Talk about employment. It's a bit boring when I do this.
It's poetry, man. It's poetry.
It's going to sound really boring if I explain like this. Okay, so yeah. So experiences of work, you know, like people with you know, on shitty contracts and things like this, how the working conditions are and stuff like this, you know. A little bit of stuff about immigration and Brexit, that kind of mentality.
Do you keep up with all of that living in Italy?
It affects me directly, so you know.
Yeah,
of course I live in another country.
What's the take over that side in terms of the media and the news? Like, is the presentation of the information notably different, have you noticed? I'm always fascinated to get an insight into that.
I think, for example, when I went to Belgium, people just say, we don't care whether you leave or not. The locals there said, if you want to leave, good, we don't care. You know, in Italy it's a bit divided, because there you have the main political party there now wants to leave the European Union, so they're supportive of Brexit, no? Whereas the people, but it, there it's not even possible, because they're tied into the euro, you know. Most of the people in my circle of friends are all kind of pro-European, let's say. You know, I don't know many people who that would want to take Italy out of the EU. But I think a lot of them there are just saying, a lot of people there just think they're crazy. They just think they're crazy. They don't realize what harm they're doing to themselves. This is what they say. But if they want to do it. Good on you. That's what you want to do, go and do it. And then, you know,
It's a mess, isn't it?
In London it's different, isn't it? I mean, like, London is different to the rest of the country.
Yeah. Well, it's its own bubble. You know, I found going back home that so many people of my peer group back home in the Midlands voted leave.
Yeah.
Because their approach and their attitudes and their politics and everything is just, I don't want to say backward, because it's their own and they believe in it. Yeah. But
why do they want to leave?
There's a variety of reasons. I think economics is one of them. There's a couple of people who I think did seem to believe, I don't know whether they still do, but that we'd be better off out. Because obviously there was so much
economically.
Yeah. And there was obviously so much in the campaign of like the money will go here, it will go here.
So you know,
like
the obvious stuff.
We'll get all this money and put it in the NHS. It's oh yeah, great. Yeah, let's definitely support that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, but
it?
When are they going to put money in the NHS? You know, to me, I mean,
we're a very divided country right now.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. They're probably like I say, there isn't one thing. One specific reason why people want to leave the European Union, but I don't know what's. But I think you have to kind of. I kind of think what's behind it. What is the behind it? And behind it is a kind of a mistrust of
the other, quote unquote.
Yeah,
and it's also I think people want to get back to the glory days of the past.
I think
and those days are gone.
I think so as well.
They're
Yes, and it's like a kind of.
Let's get back to that war era camaraderie and.
Yeah,
we know everyone, and it's about community, and it's like, well,
yeah.
I mean, the irony is that you know, community is being ripped apart by our own government, not by the people that are moving into these areas.
Yeah,
like the notion of community is being destroyed by the Conservatives.
Yeah,
and what they're doing to businesses and schools, and you know, that's not anyone that's come. I mean, and the whole history of humanity is about emigration and migration, isn't it? That's the whole history of the world.
Yeah,
like
I think that you know, like. I think in the rest of Europe, I think they view the UK as being British people as being a bit arrogant. They always think that you think that you're better.
Well,
than
we
us.
Are. How many English people when they go abroad do they take the time to learn the language and speak in the language, even if it's simple?
The people on the continent, their view is that British people, not all, the majority of British people, it's the mentality is an arrogance that we're better than you.
Yeah.
We saved you in two world wars. We have an empire and this, and like you say, some British people have this mentality, and they think, oh, we had an empire.
I mean, they're just nostalgic
insane.
For the
but
past.
It's the same people in the fascists in Italy think we had a Roman Empire.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, how far?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? How far back are we going to go?
Yeah, I mean,
time moves on.
Yeah, yeah.
The world changes.
Yeah, exactly. The world changes and stuff. And like you know, the people going back to these glory days, and there's this kind of mistrust. And I kind of think it's a kind of a generational thing because, like, I think that the younger generation, let's say 18 to 25, I think that they care less about the Second World War. I mean, they still think it was important. They realize it's an image, but they don't think it's not in their mind. No, but people like of our generation, whose grandparents lived in were affected, and we've heard stories from our grandparents, from our parents about the war, blah blah blah. You know, it's in our minds. This, you know, and that is why you have this generational gap for people that are kind of like. Who let's say 40 some who had grandparents now 45 and above 40 and above possibly they voted to leave because it's split because they are still in their mind they've been indoctrinated from this thing of like you know the Britain of the past and that
and all Germans are bad because of the war and, and notions like
and you know and
I had a Scottish comedian on the podcast recently, and she laid down this brilliant notion of how we could change things for the better within the educational system and about teaching the youth the truth and the real reasons behind things like, you know, the suffragettes movement and women's rights and LGBT rights, because she pointed out, she was like, how many people do you know who are anti-Semitic? Of a certain age, very few, because you're taught in school that the Holocaust was this horrible thing, and so you're like, well, that's just persecution that makes no sense and it's evil. And of course, I've got no problem with anyone who is, you know, a Jew or any kind of Hebrew, whatever. Yeah. I've got no problem with them. And it's like, if we just teach that in schools, like women are equal, gay people are equal. This is why that person's surname is that. That's why his surname is that. Like their parents came from here. And you actually teach them about migration and the patterns of human behavior. And then you kind of eradicate prejudice.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think
it's a simple solution.
I think that the role of your environment and your family as well has more of an effect. Yeah. I mean, like, with education in school and stuff like that, you could say. But you know, like,
hate breeds hate.
You know, it's
it?
Something that comes that is planted in your mind. If you're from a, if you're if you know.
Let's say you've got racist parents and it's indoctrinated in you from...
Yeah, I mean, like, racist people, probably the parents are racist as well. Do you know what I mean? Not, it's not always the case, of course, no.
But I doubt but there's very many racists whose parents aren't racist.
But it's not just the family. It's the environment that you grow up in. I mean,
friends.
Where do you hear that stuff?
Yeah.
It's
the media, like, as well, man. The media is responsible.
Yeah,
for
but
a,
that yeah that can they can
a
be,
lot
they,
of that
they,
misinformation.
They can. As you say, they can spread it. Yeah. But like,
they're taking our jobs.
Yeah, right. All this stuff. But like, you know, like all, you know, like all these terms and stuff. If suddenly a young kid starts saying something that's racist or xenophobic, so it's like, okay, you didn't come up with that. They didn't come up with that. They must have heard that somewhere. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, they've picked up on it somewhere, but it could be, you know, I mean, it could be at home, it could be from the friends, it could be in the street, it could be in the playground, you know, they, you know, and you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? At the moment now, I think that it's probably, you know, I was born here and I grew up here. I mean, I grew up in the 70s where the National Front was at its peak, but it was kind of seen as like they're kind of wacky, you know. Even to a certain extent, the BNP,
they weren't in power,
they weren't part of the mainstream. Now, like, the right has become more of the mainstream. It's become more accepted to say that, but probably the thing is that nothing ever changed. Maybe, you know, a part of me thinks, well, maybe nothing ever changed. Maybe people have always thought that, but they didn't say anything. You know, but now they think that they're legit.
They've got their free pass to.
Yeah, they got the free pass. Yeah, exactly.
Openly declare, this is what I am.
Yeah,
this is
because they're saying it. It's okay if I say it now, you know.
Where were your mum and dad from?
My dad's from Mauritius.
Right.
And my mum is from Sikkim. Do you know that?
No. Where is it? Where's that? Where is it?
It's in the Himalayas.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, borders with Bhutan, Nepal in there. Yeah, up in the mountains.
What an amazing place. Have you been?
Yeah, but a long time ago. Yeah, I went. I should go. Every year I think, okay, I'll go next year, but it never materializes. Maybe next year I'll go.
Are your folks still around?
Yeah, my folks are here. Yeah, they both live here, yeah, in the UK.
And because a lot of this stuff must be on your mind now as a parent, like how you're raising your kids. And
I mean, my children are... What would they be? They'd be half Italian, a quarter Mauritian, and a quarter Sikkimese. But okay, they have a kind of British by proxy culture. Okay, because it's not their culture. I mean, it's not their number one, but they know a lot, of course, because they speak English. They know a lot about it, but they've never lived here.
Been in Rome.
They come here two or three times a year, but they've never gone to school here, is what I'm saying. They've never lived here.
And they're not growing up with English, like, fellow kids. They're not growing up with English friends.
They go to Italian school. Yeah. They go to the local school. So for them, I live in like a bit of a bubble, because where I live is quite a left-wing area. And the part of Rome where I live. And
what about Rome as a city, as a whole? Is it fairly left, fairly right? A lot of both?
it's a bit of both, isn't it? I mean,
because Italy's obviously no stranger to...
No, yeah. Because they have extreme politics there, don't they? Extreme right and extreme left. And it's kind of like football teams over there. Supporting, yes, yeah, like, you know, you're either left wing or right wing. You support Lazio or you support Roma, you know. It's like a
black and white,
yeah. And then but now you've got, you know, in the, they've got these populist parties, because, you know, they have an election every two or three years. There we have a general election. The government's now, that I think the government is almost collapsed now, I think. So maybe it's possible that we'll have a general election in October. So it's always a coalition, so the coalition always collapses. And so there's the populist party, Cinque Stelle, Five Star Movement, and there is the Lega, which is Salvini, which is the far right, together in a coalition in a government. So obviously, you know, a lot of Italians voted for the far right. But, you know, so it's
there are obviously some people who swing, who go from one
extreme to the other. Yeah,
because, you know, they've had left-wing governments before in the past. So, you know, I think that people kind of get fed up. And in the end, they kind of like do a kamikaze. It's like, okay, I'll show them. I'll show the politicians. I'll shit on my front doorstep and vote for them. You know what I mean?
That'll show them.
That'll show them. And maybe it will.
Maybe we all deserve to be eradicated.
You know, I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I just think, you know, part of me thinks, okay, put them in power. Let the right be in power. 2-3. They never manage the economy. They can't do anything. All they can talk about is are immigrants.
Yeah,
that's it. After that, what do you say? You don't say. Policy, they don't say anything. All it is immigrants, and that is and that in itself, the only economics they know, that in itself is a business. No, all those right wing things, you know, like commentators and stuff, right wing commentators. They get money for spouting that shit. You know what I mean? So, but half of them probably don't even believe it. You know what I mean? You know, like Katie Hopkins, Tommy Robinson. You know how much money they make from their
running their mouth.
Yeah, running their mouth. They get funded, asking people to subscribe, put on the channels. Now they've been taken off a few now because there's. I mean, for them, I guess it's a revenue. No, they must get a revenue.
And easy money, because you don't need to think what you're saying, do you?
He doesn't work. Yeah, he just out of anything, you know. Oh, yeah, who am I going to have a go at today?
They'll do.
Boom, ching, more money. You know, it's an industry in itself, that thing. And these people are trolls, aren't they, basically? Like I said, they probably don't believe it anyway. Because what would they do? Katie Hopkins, get a job, you know what I mean? If you're not doing that, okay, I know she's bankrupt, you know? If, you know, for her, like you say, it's easy money, isn't it? You just spout off some crap and you get money for it, you know? Because at the moment...
And you get notoriety for your...
Yeah, yeah, but the thing is, yeah, but it kind of feeds itself, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That's, you know, because that's what they want. The thing of all those people, right, they want attention and they're always the victim. They're always the victim. Oh, look at us. Everybody's attacking us, you know. Oh yeah, but you know, our freedom of speech. I can't say that, but you know, they always make it out that they are the victim, you know. And probably it's a kind
they're
of
never taking ownership over their actions.
It's a kind of, and it's probably a kind of form of mental illness. I know it's like a paranoia. It's like everyone's against me. Oh, you know what I mean? It's,
What about music? Do you think music still has a place and the power to change the way people think about the world?
I think it does, but I think it's I think it's lost some of the power now, because you don't have to be a musician to say what you want. You can use things like Twitter,
have a platform anyway.
There are other mediums that you can use, and also what you want to say in a 3-minute song you could do in a half an hour podcast or a video on YouTube or whatever. Yeah, so it's not the only it has kind of lost some of its power, but you know, I still think there's a place for it as well.
I think we lost a lot of the outspoken, I don't know, politically aware artists that there used to be.
Yeah, but what I mean, yeah, but what's behind that? Maybe they're worried about upsetting,
damaging their own revenue perhaps, or their own chances of success.
So I mean, I could say what I want, because I only got 14 14 followers, so what do you want me to say? Should I say something outrageous?
It's gonna go viral. From King Prawn. Al hasn't said that, has he?
Yeah, now he's only got 12 followers. He's lost two in the last 10 seconds.
Are there any tracks that you think that you would write from here going forward that would, you know, poke that stick into that fire and explore those things and address those issues? Are you driven? Yeah. Are you still driven by that?
Yeah, definitely. Like I was saying on the new album, we have one track, that Colonel Panic. Colonel Panic is all about that kind of, like, you know, fixation with media and, you know, people, you know, riling each other up, you know,
and tearing each other down.
Yeah, like antagonizing, like, you know, like right-wing media commentators, you know, winding people up, getting people angry and stuff like that, you know. And you know, really, we should put the phone down for a bit. We all spend far too much time on this, and really...
What are you on? What apps are you on? What are you wasting your time with?
No, I just
texting. Old school. I'm old school.
Not even. My text is just a thumbs up. I don't know. No, I mean, I just, like, you know,
you don't strike me as a social media guy.
No, I'm not a social media person. No.
You're just looking at
who's listening,
right? Well, there's 12 of them now. There was 14.
Yeah. No, I'm not a social media person. I mean, I read the news, stuff like that. You know, I read the news. I follow football, things like this, music, a bit of music and that. But the thing that I waste my time, like most people waste their time, it's just irrelevant facts. It's just like, you know, how many bubbles are in a bottle of Coca-Cola? Oh, I know. Let's look it up.
Google. That's where you're spending your hours.
Yeah, it's just searching, like, oh, you know, like, how fast can a cheetah run? And, you know, how far is it to Uranus? It's just stuff like that.
Perhaps
just,
that's a lot of why, because when you can find out anything, it almost takes away a lot of that natural inquisitive nature that we all have as humans, you know, as creatives. And before the internet, like, it was funny today, yesterday was August the 8th.
Yeah.
And NoFX have a song called August 8th, which they thought was the day that Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead died.
Yeah.
So they wrote a song about it, but actually he passed away on the 9th. But because they wrote it in the 90s, they were like, well, there's no way of checking. There probably was. They could have gone to a library or something.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The internet wasn't there. So they just wrote the song, released it, and, oh, fuck, we got the date wrong. And I was thinking yesterday, I was like, that would literally never happen today, would it? It just wouldn't, because you'd be in the studio.
You'd end up with egg on your face, basically. Yeah, you'd look...
And there's kind of a magic to that.
Yeah.
It's like a pub quiz. Do you know what I mean? Who wants to do a pub quiz now? Because you could. Yeah. It takes a lot to not want to do that. Yeah. And I would want to do that.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, like you said, I just spent my time looking at, you know, how much rainfall was last. It was in June, and like, I just wasted my time because I've looked at it, and then if you were to ask me, oh, how much rainfall? Hang on a sec, I can't remember.
Gone.
It's gone
because a new fact pushed it out.
It doesn't make any difference whatsoever.
Well, that's the other thing as well, is we all need to put politics
aside.
It's making us boring and look after the planet.
It's making us boring. That's what it is. We're going to end up being boring.
Amen. and we got to save the planet, haven't we? Like, we got to push politics aside and
Definitely.
Start taking care of this soil that we're on.
Definitely, you know, these are distractions, aren't they?
They are.
At the end of the day, it's just the pub quiz is a distraction. When I don't mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All these facts and stuff are just a distraction for what's happening and stuff, you know. But, you know, hopefully, it's still relatively new. Who knows how it's going to change? It might, you know. It might change in the future. People might get bored of it. Like, people are getting bored of Facebook now, aren't they? I read.
I read. One of my fact sheets.
I learn everything on YouTube and Wikipedia.
Well, I think when it's been around for a certain time, certainly young people are my parents are on that. Why would I want to be on that?
Yeah, or something new takes over, doesn't it?
So,
I mean, I left Facebook years ago. Left it years ago.
Who does all the band promotion then?
Nick.
You let him take care of that.
Nick does the Facebook. And Zach does Twitter Instagram or Twitter, or maybe both. But I think we all have access to that. I don't know how to use it. I've access to it, but I don't touch anything in case I mess something up.
I love it. Final thing I want to ask you, dude, is how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 50.
50 years old.
50 big ones.
Big ones. Damn, that dude looks good for his age. If I look that good when I'm 50, I will be stoked.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.